This episode is brought to you by Pure Gym. A new season's right round the corner, and with Pure Gym, you'll be ready to take it on. Whether you're there to tone up, tune out, or just take some weight off your shoulders. With low monthly prices, no contract, plus top quality kit and unlimited classes included, whatever you need, Pure Gym is there for it. Head to puregym.com to find out more.
Hey, it's Dan Bova from Entrepreneur Media, and welcome to How Success Happens, the show where I talk to awesome people who do awesome things and ask the simple question, how on earth did you do that? Ready to get informed and inspired? I am too, so let's get to it. How Success Happens starts now. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. I'm Dan Bova from Entrepreneur. Great to be heard by you once again. Hey, do you want to buy a soccer team? Because I got a guy. That guy is in fact today's guest. Sam Porter is the man when it comes to sports investment, with an emphasis on soccer or football, depending on which part of the world you're listening to this. Sam co-owns Club Necaxa in Mexico, Club Equidad in Colombia, and is the co-owner of the Brooklyn Pickleball team in Major League Pickleball. Now, he's led investment groups that involve all kinds of recognizable names that you've heard in the team ownership game: Ryan Reynolds, Rob McElhenney, Eva Longoria. So let's find out how and why soccer is scoring with so many investors these days. Sorry for that pun. That was awful. Welcome, Sam.
Thanks for having me, Dan. I really appreciate it and happy to be here.
Great. So before we get into the weeds of how you got into this and where you started and where you are now, can you just give us like an overview of this? Because as I said, we see this in the headlines a lot about celebrities investing in teams. I've spoken to some business people who are getting into those kinds of investments. Why is this gaining so much traction now?
Yeah, I think that the ownership of teams in general, and then speaking specifically about soccer or football, is that for a really long time, these clubs or assets were only available to the very richest people in society in any given country. And we have seen over the past decade or so, a democratization or like a sort of ability of Main Street type of investors to be involved in these. Now, typically still your lead investor is pretty wealthy or has access to a lot of capital. And we are seeing more institutional investors come in and lead those investments and then have LPs or limited partners come in and be part of that. But I think what people have realized is you look at the entertainment world, and sports is part of the entertainment world. And for years, Hollywood studios were publicly traded or had access to all different kinds of liquidity. And sports teams were more of, it started off as one really wealthy family, then it became these small groups of really wealthy people, many of which you never heard of before. And then now we have seen this collectives of groups of could be a couple dozen different people, some of them you've heard of, some of them you haven't, coming together. You're sharing the risk, you're sharing the upside, and you're using the different elements that different investors bring to the table. So one guy could be a finance guy, a different guy could be a real estate guy. You could have a celebrity to help magnify your message or what you're trying to do. So I think that has become more popular as the scope and opportunity set around the sports teams as an asset class has continued to grow.
So you're essentially building like an Avengers to buy a team, or Ocean's 11 or something like that, where everyone has specific things that they're good at.
In some ways, it was years ago starting to happen like that when you saw the likes of Will Smith investing in the Sixers quite a long time ago, or Justin Timberlake investing in the Memphis Grizzlies. And then I think it's become more and more refined where every time there's a major sports transaction, you're seeing like a hometown celebrity, a hometown hero of some sort from some background. It could be sports, it could be music, it could be acting, come and join a group that also has business people of different elements. And then as the sports teams are the focal point of a lot of times real estate, a lot of times retail, hospitality, events outside of the core sports event that the team is working on. So what you're seeing is, yes, finding strategic partners who can help you execute on those different potential revenue streams and growth opportunities.
Obviously, there's huge financial things to be gained here, but do you often step back and be like, holy crap, I own sports teams? Did you see that coming in your life?
It is surreal at times because you put the match on television and you see a stadium filled with people. Our Mexican soccer team, Necaxa, will play Club America if we play it at their place, Azteca Stadium. There could be 60,000 people there live. There could be 8 million people watching in Mexico, 2 million people watching in the United States. And it is a little bit surreal to think, wow, I own this, we own this, and this is a thing that so many people are engaging in right now. It's really cool. It is not something that I, from a young age, was like, this is what I'm going to do. But it is something that, as time went on, was like, this does make sense and somebody's got to do it.
So we always ask people on this show for their personal definition of success. What does that word mean to you? And has it evolved for you over the years?
I don't look at success as some specific number of economic dollars in my pocket or economic activity. I look at it as really specific to each individual project. For instance, the club is 102 years old and has won multiple championships in League MX. So our definition for success there, or my definition for success there, is can we be a team that makes the city of Aguascalientes, where the club is based, proud? Necaxa moved from Mexico City to Aguascalientes around 20 years ago. So we have fans and people who are really dedicated to the club in Mexico City, and then obviously throughout the U.S. and the rest of the world. So for us, success at Necaxa is, are the fans of the club feeling like the club is directionally going where it's supposed to go, competing at the highest level? It's really tough if you're going to say, my definition of success is to win a championship. Then maybe you get a championship at some point during the tenure of your ownership. Maybe you don't. That would certainly be successful, but I think there are other ways you can be successful. And that means that the club is fulfilling its sort of duty as a civic institution, making the fans proud of their club, having a really good environment for the staff and the players and everybody who's around the club to feel like, I'm happy to come here and work here every single day. And then also our investor group to feel like I invested in something that, yes, is going to have financial returns or is having current financial returns, but is also something that I'm proud of to tell other people that I'm part of that. So that's the goal at Necaxa, to be successful. At the Brooklyn Pickleball team, that is one where we're in our third year. We are really pushing to try to win the championship every single year. There aren't as, you know, in League MX, again, the club's 100 years old. There's multiple 100-year-old clubs in the league. You're competing against some really major heavyweights. The playing field in Major League Pickleball is a little more equal. So we're like, hey, this is a space where we can be more successful. But still there, the definition of success is, are we generating sponsorships and partnerships that are going to help us grow the brand? So I look at it as really hard to say black and white. Like, this is successful and this isn't. For me, it's a very gray area. And it probably evolves. What was successful for us last semester at Necaxa is going to be a little different than what's success for us. It's probably going to go up a little bit. And so you're always, to me, it's amorphous and you're always refining it, but there are certain things that are important to us as it relates to that word.
Are you always on the lookout for new opportunities? And what drew you to Necaxa, for example? There's a lot of teams out there. Like, how do you scope out these opportunities? And then I guess the second part, as you mentioned, these fan bases been around for a long time. So how do you assure the fan bases that you're taking care of them, that you're not some outsider, but you're very much want to be a part of this thing?
We are always on the lookout for things, but we're also very thematic in what we're trying to accomplish. So the reason that soccer, football is attractive to us is a lot of the same reason that pickleball is attractive to us, but coming from different ends of the spectrum, right? Soccer is the most popular sport in the world. The reason I say they're similar is the small democratic, extremely accessible. Everybody can play soccer, especially at the youth level. It does not require a ton of equipment. It's not super expensive to have the opportunity to play soccer at some level or another. The same with pickleball. Every tennis court you can easily play pickleball on, and there's not a ton of equipment. Yes, you've got to have some pickleballs, you've got to have a paddle, but for the most part, it is not intense requirements to be able to get into the sport and just get started from a skill standpoint as well. We like these things that have the opportunity to be very appealing to the masses, are not niche sports that are just for a handful of people for whatever reason, economic reasons or otherwise. We are always on the lookout, but we're looking for things that fit very specific kind of growth opportunity sets. So you asked about Necaxa. What we liked about Necaxa was Mexico has approximately 130 million people in Mexico. Liga MX is their NFL, meaning every match is a cultural event where people are watching it. They're grabbing their dad, their kids, their neighbors. They're getting in the backyard. They're watching it. They're going to the stadium. They over-index on passion. And it's a really important part of Mexican culture. Of the 130 million people in Mexico is larger than any European country by quite a wide margin. So then you have another, call it, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but say around 50 million Mexican Americans who are either first, second, or third generation Mexicans living in the U.S. So between those two population pools, you have approximately 180 million people who Liga MX is very likely the league and the sport that they are most connected to. So it was just to me and my partner, Al, from the get-go, it was like, this is a place where there has not been a ton of external investment from outside of Mexico. In fact, none up to the point that we came into it. And it was an opportunity where we saw just a real opportunity to take that demographic ride with Mexicans and Mexican Americans and try to do a little more. So an example of that is we have a show coming out August 7th, 2025, Necaxa, which is the same production team and the same group as Welcome to Wrexham. Ryan Reynolds and Rob Mack and Eva Longoria will all be in the show. And it follows the inside of Club Necaxa and our story and what we're trying to do. And I really don't think that up until us doing this, yes, there have been some shoulder programming and some content around. You can watch all the matches for sure. They're very accessible. But this kind of behind the scenes storytelling, I don't think that was really being created and catered to the LATAM audience. So that's something that we wanted to bring to the table. So we look at opportunities like that where you can come in, help a thing grow, shine a light on it, but also you have some tailwinds that are helping you do that just based on the natural situation.
I think one of the things that people who watched Wrexham got to know is that it is a passionate sport. The players, the fans, and we've seen with Wrexham, sometimes the owners, as much as they might love a player personally, it is a sport and it is a business. And sometimes they have to trade or sometimes they have to say, sorry, you're being cut. How has that been for you? What's that experience like?
It's tough because you do, especially when you have success with players. And Wrexham has been promoted 3 straight times. So they've had a tremendous amount of success. And you're in it together. I go to a good amount of Necaxa matches. I'm in the locker room before and after the match. I get to know these guys. And for anybody, whether it's NFL, NBA, international football, any of these sports, there are these personal relationships. And so when the player has to move on to another club, it's always tough. But what you try to do on a human level is either explain the reasons why this is happening. For us, it's a double-edged sword, right? We've had a lot of success in the recent history. And so we've had our coach, who I developed a really close relationship with, Nicholas LaCarmone. He got bought out of his contract with us to join a bigger club in the league, Cruz Azul. So he left us. And the WhatsApp messages going back and forth between us were novels. And so that was pretty emotional because we're like effectively the same age. We both have young kids. We're talking about how we're going to grow this thing together. And then I can't really blame him because at the end of the day, they made him a financial offer that was really significant. And as somebody who understands business, and I used to be a player agent and representing coaches as well, I know what it means to get that kind of increase in salary and what that kind of financial impact can have on a family. So I didn't begrudge him from a financial standpoint, but we had talked about how we were going to grow this thing together. And then we have this tremendous season and he leaves. And then players who you also, and Necaxa, we've been in a little bit of a situation where, and this is the case in global football, I don't know how much of your audience is familiar with it, but in global football, basically players sign contracts all the time. But when a bigger club comes in and makes an offer to buy that player's contract from you, a lot of times as the club that is having the offer made to you for that player, you can negotiate for a higher price. But if the player is also coming to you and saying, I want to take that deal because that's going to be significant for me, you end up kind of selling the player against what you would want to do for the best outcome for your club. So you're asking about, like, we're saying bye to players as we're cutting them. A lot of times now we're having success in developing these players and then they're leaving us when we're kind of like, hey, stay a little longer. And they're like, there's a lot more money over here. So it's a two-way street in football. Less so, I think, maybe in other sports.
Yeah, wow.
I've ruled out uni because I want to live at home.
I've ruled out uni because I want to earn money.
I've ruled out uni because of my grades.
Study with the Open University and there's no need to rule out anything. With our respected degrees, you can learn from home and work alongside study. We're open to all. Plus, you'll have the support of expert tutors. So rethink your future with the degree you didn't think was possible. The Open University. The future is open.
That's intense. But getting to know, I'm curious too, like getting to know these elite players, what have you learned about that drive? It's beyond physical, I think, what makes a champion. What have you learned from those conversations in the locker room or what you see on the sidelines or see on the field or pitch, I should say, sorry?
I think the guys who really get to that level of getting to the highest level, they're really consumed by it. They have a hunger that you can't teach, that you can't develop through sessions. Now, there's going to be some players on the team who are maybe role players who can do a certain job and do it well enough to help an entire team. In football and soccer, you've got 11 guys on the field. You can bring in 5 substitutes. There's 18 active players. So not every single player in a given match is going to have that absolute hunger. But you need to have a couple guys who are just consumed by that need to win. And then you also, you kind of need a little bit of luck on your side as well, that the injuries are with you and that you don't get a bad call from the ref at the wrong time and these different things that can happen. I actually went back and for the first time since the pandemic, went back and watched the Jordan documentary, The Last Dance. And I thought it was so good when I watched the first time. And then going back and watching it, it's just like, wow, seeing the way Michael Jordan was really made me as an owner think about how do you go and find those guys that have that level of hunger. Now, basketball 5-on-5, one guy playing both ways can go in and take over and do a lot of stuff. He did, but he had great players around him, great coaching. And what I've learned from these guys is they're laser focused, they're hungry, and the stars also have to align even for those guys. You can be the hungriest, you can be the most focused, but you know, some of those external factors, your best teammate can't have food poisoning or your coach can't be going through a divorce or something. You need everything to be rowing in the same direction, and that's how championships happen.
When you're meeting players for the first time, is it just a vibe you get? Are there certain questions that you always ask? How do you feel out if they've got that hunger?
So the player identification process is one where, as the owner, I'm not somebody who's going through and watching tons of film. A lot of the players we're acquiring for our clubs are 19 years old. Some of them are 17 years old. Some of them are in their 20s, but they're all relatively young. And I come from a legal, agent, operations, ownership, management background. I don't come from a scouting, coaching background myself. So we have built teams at our clubs who are our recruitment teams, our talent identification teams. So by the time I'm talking to a player, we're down to this guy checks these boxes, this guy checks these boxes. Here's how we evaluate them and here's how we think about them. When it comes to the player acquisition element of things, I am very much I don't want to say hands off because I've hired a lot of the people who are doing these jobs, but I am empowering them to go and sign that. Now they may come to me and say, this guy is 23 and here's what it's going to cost to acquire him and here's what his wages are going to be. This guy's 21. You know, his resume might not be quite as strong. We think his potential might be a little higher. And what do you think about how that fits into our overall strategy? But we're not relying on my interview with a player to decide who we're signing. Now, when it comes to managers and club personnel outside of players, I am spending a lot of time in that process, feeling them out, having meals with them, deciding who we're going to hire, because then they are the ones who are going to pick the players.
In those conversations, is there a magic question that you're like, whenever they answer this, I know they're the person, and when they answer it this way, they're not?
No, for me, it's back to your question about like, how do you define success? It's a case-by-case scenario. It's going to be the aggregate of all the questions and conversations and things they ask me and things they say about their personal lives and their professional lives and how they got from point A to point B and what drives them. I really base a lot of it on what I feel people's hunger is, because I think in your working weekends, you're working late nights, you're working early, team can lose 3 or 4 matches in a row. Is your morale going to come down? Are you going to bring the people around you down? So for me, I need guys and women who are hungry, who understand that this is going to be a tough road, but who get the big picture. And so it's really trying to find those people who really want to be in this world, because it's unique. You hear from a lot of people, I hear from a lot of people who want to work in sports. People whose parents I know say, hey, my kid's graduating college or law school or grad school, they want to get a job in sports. Can you talk to them? And then also just people who want to, hey, I've been a successful investment banker, I want to move into sports. I always try to convey to them just how unique and how it's cutthroat and it's hard and it's a lifestyle. It's not 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. I can't remember a weekend where I didn't watch a match or speak to an agent or talk to somebody on my team. And I'm not complaining about it at all. I love it. But that is something that people coming from other backgrounds are not totally, I don't think, totally understand.
Yeah. I could speak to that too. Many years ago, I worked at a sports site for a bit. And there was one Sunday where I was like, oh, wow, like I have to be working right now. I can't be like sitting on the couch watching a football game, drinking a beer. Like I'm working now. So it is an interesting thing. And I wonder, when we mention you putting together these investor teams, having been through this a couple of times, like what do you tell an Eva Longoria or people like high profile people like, hey, this is what to expect about being a part owner in a football club?
The reason why we have really great relationships with Eva, Brian, Rob, Justin Verlander, Sean Marion, and Rip Hamilton, and different folks. I don't want to leave anybody out, but I think the reason why we have really good personal relationships with these guys and ladies, and we also have really good professional relationships with them in the investments, because we're just very much the way we describe it to them. You can be involved to a certain degree, or you can be a famous person whose name's never, ever comes out. We have an NFL player who's in all these deals who said, treat me like I'm not an NFL player. Treat me like I'm a dentist. A super successful dentist who invested in this, and his name's never been mentioned, but he's an investor in our group.
But you can reveal it now, right?
No, this guy wants to stay anonymous. So with the Evas of the world and these very, very famous people, we say, hey, here's the plan. Here's what we're looking to do. Here's where we think you could potentially be helpful. We're all ears if you think there's other things you could be helpful with, and this can be very collaborative. We're just open book with all that stuff. And then the individual investor has to say, this sounds great and I want to do it. Or they go, you know what, maybe this isn't the right fit for me. But we've had a really good track record with it, because I think when people go into things like this, eyes wide open, it can be fun. Winning those games, watching and winning, going to fun trips. We've got the Leagues Cup coming up where we play 3 MLS teams. So we're playing Atlanta United. We're playing Inter Miami against Messi, and that should be a great event. And then we're playing Orlando City. And all of that is stuff that we'll have these people coming out to and engaging. And I just think it's fun. And I think that as long as you're very upfront with the celebrity investors or notable folks who are investing about what your expectations of them are, don't tell them, hey, you don't have to do anything. And then 2 weeks into it, say, hey, I need you to get on the phone with a potential sponsor. And then be like, well, that wasn't the way you conveyed it to me. Just be, hey, we may call you for something. I just think it's all about transparency heading into it. And then also the personal relationship. So you build up equity that these people know you're going to do what you said you're going to do. And that goes a long way.
And what's the scene like in the owner's box at a home game?
You'll see in our upcoming show, it's an agonizingly stressful scene of me sitting, hoping that we score goals and just being on the edge of my seat until maybe we're up 3-0. And if we're losing, it's just a miserable scene. Other people might be drinking some tequila and enjoying the match a little more. For me, it's pretty much just misery until we win, and that's relief.
Got it. That's great. So we ask our listeners to write in questions at howsuccesshappens@entrepreneur.com. And we have a question for you from Leo M, who wants to know, what was your dream job when you were younger? And then maybe you can expand on how you got to where you are now.
It's a fun question because it really actually brings it together. I wanted to be a sports agent. I was never great at any sports. I wasn't the worst, but I was never great. But I love sports. But I was good at negotiating and contracts and kind of understanding the fine line of how to do those things. So I said, okay, I really like sports. I think I'm a good negotiator. We'll find out. So I went to law school. While I was in law school, I got an internship at a sports agency, which became a full-time job, which became running a division of the sports agency. So my dream job was to be a sports agent, which I accomplished. While I was a sports agent, I started meeting owners and just seeing the food chain of the sports world broadcasters, the team owners and the leagues get money that comes into them from broadcast partners, sponsors, ticket sales, all that way. And then the owners pay the players wages to play for them. And then the players pay the agents 3%, 4%, 5% to do the contracts. While I was an agent, I had some opportunities because I met some owners and I had some opportunities. But I also looked at the food chain. And I was like, wait, as an agent, I'm friends with a lot of agents and really respect the job they do and still really appreciate it. But for me, I was like, I'm kind of at the bottom of the food chain a little bit here, where the properties are paying the teams and the leagues. The teams and the leagues are paying the players are paying agents. I'm at the bottom here. I mean, maybe I want to figure out a way to get up closer to the top of the food chain. So my dream job was to be an agent. I did that and then worked my agent job into team management, being a chief strategy officer for DC United and Swansea City, and then using that experience and that opportunity to then launch my own investments into owning sports teams.
That's awesome. Wow. And it was just as easy as that. Just boom, 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 right?
A lot of years and a lot of work in between, but that was the overall kind of theme of it all.
That's great. That's awesome. And thanks for the question, Leo. And if you've got questions for any of our guests, upcoming shows, How Success Happens at entrepreneur.com. All right. Well, now we are going to head into the speed round, Sam. Are you ready for this?
I think so. I hope so.
Okay. So here we go. What is a habit that you are happy to have and one you wish you could ditch?
Habit I'm happy to have. Currently getting into the gym a few days a week. So I've got myself on that habit. So I'm getting into the gym and working out. Habit I wish I could ditch is probably offsetting the one that I'm happy to have, which is I'm a little bit of a late night snacker. I'd like to ditch that habit.
Got it. Any particular snack?
Pretzels, some nuts. It's something that you shouldn't really be eating before bed. So I'm trying to ditch that habit.
I've got a 50-year Cheez-It addiction, so I know what's...
Cheez-It, that's a great example. That's the kind of thing that I'm snacking on late at night that I need to ditch.
Do you have any ways to turn off your brain?
Yes, golf. So I like to golf. When I golf, I do everything possible to just put my phone in a hidden pocket in my bag and just not look at the phone for the entire time that I'm warming up and playing around. Sometimes if I've got something going on, I will, at the turn after nine holes, I will check the phone. I don't like to do it, but golf is really the one time where I found that I can turn off the work stuff and focus on each shot and try to play around a golf.
So when is the last time that sports made you cry?
Well, Necaxa, we had a match in the playoffs this past season against Tigres in Monterrey. We came from behind to take the lead. We would have advanced to the semifinals and very controversial call. The other team scored a goal in extra stoppage time. They called the goal off. And then they went to the VAR and then they awarded the goal and we lost. And I was in this tiny luxury box in Monterrey, Mexico at Tigres away. And I just wanted to disappear, shrink, because we lost literally the last second of the match on a referee decision. So it was agonizing. I went to go outside and just walk away. So I was just going to walk out of the stadium. And the security people said, you got to get back into your box. Then, because we had cheered when we scored earlier, the fans who were below us knew that it was the Necaxa ownership in the box that we were in. They started throwing some water bottles at us. Nothing really dangerous, but it was like, I couldn't walk out to leave the stadium. The security said we couldn't leave yet. We had to wait till some of the fans left. We just had the most agonizing loss I've ever suffered as an owner. So I don't know if I actually shed tears, but I felt really unhappy and very, very sad. I felt a lot of emotional turmoil in the moment.
That's wild. It's like literally trapped in hell. Like, my God.
Yeah, it was tough.
You mentioned that you played sports. What is your personal greatest sports achievement that you are personally responsible for?
You know, honestly, I don't really think I have one where I'm like, I did this amazing thing.
You never scored a goal in fourth grade?
No. I mean, nothing that really stands out to me. I've had some decent pickup basketball games in my youth and some decent rounds of golf, but I don't have a hole in one. And I don't have that one thing that I think is just amazing. So I just have to punt on that.
All right. That's okay. It keeps you hungry for that hole in one. That's good. And then finally, what's the best sports movie?
Maybe it's a little on the nose and I don't know when it's coming out, but I just got back into watching Happy Gilmore. and Happy Gilmore 2 is coming out any day now. And I have a 10-year-old daughter and an 8-year-old son who have taken up golf. And they said, hey, we heard at golf camp that there's this really funny movie. And so we put it on. I didn't know if it was going to be totally age appropriate or not, but it's ultimately fine. And now Happy Gilmore 2 is coming out. So we've agreed that we're going to get together and I'll watch it. But it's a hilarious movie. Golf, Adam Sandler in his prime, so much good stuff in there. So for me, at least at the moment, I think Happy Gilmore is probably right there.
Sam, this has been so awesome and cool hearing about this world. It does get you fired up from where I'm sitting. Where can people who are listening to this keep up with other teams that you're involved with, specific teams you're involved with?
So it's Club Necaxa, N-E-C-A-X-A is our Mexican club. Club Equidad is our club in Bogota. That club is going through a transition now. We're sunsetting the Club Equidad identity, and it's going to be relaunched as Internacional de Bogota, so Inter Bogota, starting in the beginning of the 26th season. And then Brooklyn Pickleball Team on all the socials, and you can follow the stuff. I'm not personally super active on any social myself, but the clubs all have great updates. And then obviously you could follow Eva, Ryan, Rob. They're all across these different teams. And I think the Necaxa show that's going to come out on August 7th, I think will be a great lens into a lot of this stuff that we're talking about. And so if you've been interested in this conversation or conversations like this, that'll be a fun show to check out. When native Spanish speakers are talking, it's in Spanish with English subtitles. And when English speakers are speaking, it's in English with Spanish subtitles. So it's almost like a Narcos kind of a thing. But it's really good. Ryan and Rob are in most of the episodes. Eva's in every episode. You'll see boardroom stuff, locker room stuff, players' home lives. I think it's going to be really great. So if this is interesting to you, I would definitely give that a check.
Awesome. I would ask for a spoiler, but I don't want to spoil it. I want to see what happens.
I gave you it for the T-Grace match where I almost cried. Yeah, that's the spoiler.
There you go. All right, man. Thanks so much. This has been really cool. And where's Brooklyn Pickleball Team play? I'm in New York.
The MLP, Major League Pickleball, is a tour. So we actually just played in New York over July 4th weekend on Roosevelt Island. There's a tournament there. MLP comes back to New York City in Central Park in September. So I'll send you over the details and we'd love to have you out.
Oh, yeah. That'd be awesome. Cool. Well, great talking to you.
Thanks so much for the time, Dan. I really appreciate it.
Have a great day.
You too.
Hey, what's the biggest hurdle that you feel like is getting in the way of your success? Let me know at howsuccesshappens@entrepreneur.com and I will ask our next guest.